Gulf region chemical sector has grown swiftly over the last 20 years to become one of the leaders in global petrochemicals. Access to huge reservoirs of oil and gas, plus fast-growing export markets, especially in Asia, have ensured the success of the industry there. But the industry globally, as well as in the Gulf, is now being battered by the economic fallout of the coronavirus pandemic. And on top of that, the climate crisis is now pushing the industry quickly towards a low carbon, more sustainable future. I'd like to understand how the Gulf's chemical industry is performing against this backdrop and how it is adapting to trends such as sustainability. I'm Will Beecham, and to answer these questions, I'm delighted this week to welcome our special guest, Dr. Sadoun, General Secretary of the Gulf Petrochemical Association. Joining him, we have our regular panel of experts: John Richardson, who's a senior consultant in Asia for ICIS, Paul Hodges, chairman of New Normal Consulting, and Nigel Davis, our insight editor. So, Dr. Sadoun, first of all, delighted to have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. And I wondered, could you start off by outlining the performance of the Gulf Cooperation Council, GCC, chemical sector in 2020, and then maybe give us some pointers for how you see 2021 coming out, bearing in mind the impact of the pandemic on domestic and export markets?
Well, thank you, Will. I'm delighted to be with you and join John and Nigel on this session. We all know that 2020 has been a very challenging year for all of us. However, our regional industry had shown resilience and acted fast to provide a solution. Being part of the global industry, the Arabian Gulf industry experienced serious headwinds during 2020 on the demand side and in terms of its revenue and trade. And despite all these challenges, the regional chemical output continued to grow, albeit at a slower rate of 1.5% versus an average of 4.8% over the past decade. This is compared to a negative growth of 2.6% for the global chemical industry in 2020, as per the American Chemistry Council. In the first half of 2020, the pandemic resulted in an increase in demand of chemical for the manufacture of products used to enable the hygiene, testing and treatment of patients affected by the virus, alongside personal protective equipment, as well as essential food packaging material. The regional producer, despite many ongoing challenges such as regional lockdown, workforce limitation, supply chain disruption, and so on, were able to maintain stable operation rate of 23%, which was in line with the long-term average and above the global benchmark. To further define the impact of the pandemic on the regional industry performance, allow me to briefly highlight its performance with respect to sales, trade, capital projects, and companies' stock prices. On sales revenue, regional chemical companies were hurt during the plunging prices and collapsing demand during Q1 and Q2 of 2020, and started to bounce back only in the third quarter of 2020, but haven't yet fully recovered. To put things into perspective, it is important to highlight that 2019 was not a good year for the chemical industry. The regional industry sales revenue in 2019 dropped by 18.7% compared with 2018 revenue, which was $84.1 billion. With the outbreak of the COVID-19 in 2020, the regional industry took the hardest hit, causing additional erosion in revenue and margins. The year-on-year sales revenue is projected to decline in 2020 by 20 to 24% to $52 billion. Similarly, the regional industry trade was impacted negatively by the closure of major ports in China in Q1 2020, which caused supply chain disruption and longer delivery lead times for GCC chemical export. Ocean rate increased almost three times the market average prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, which meant significant erosion of profit for GCC producer. We estimate the GCC chemical trade volume to drop in 2020 by 9.2% as a result of the supply chain disruption and lower demand. This is against a drop of 20% in global chemical trade as per the WTO. Perhaps it's important to highlight that the GCC chemical industry had been on a consistent growth trajectory over the past four decades or so. The planned projects by the regional industry due to be commissioned in 2020-2024 period stood at $71 billion. However, with the considerable reduction in global investment, there are concerns that regional companies may hold on from bringing additional capacity on stream before demand for chemical products completely recovers. There are a number of projects which have already been delayed or whose configuration had been reconsidered. These include the crude oil to chemical project developed jointly by SABIC and Saudi Aramco, which may now be downsized to use Aramco existing facilities in Yanbu, and its scope may be reevaluated. Qatar Petroleum Ras Laffan expansion project was also pushed back to 2021 due to delay in the bidding process and the financial investment decision. Oman Duqm's refinery and petrochemical project was further postponed to 2022, while Kuwait Al Zour integrated refining and petrochemical complex was delayed further due to the pandemic. That said, there was projects which come on stream during 2020. For example, the Farabi petrochemical $1 billion projects in Yanbu. A number of mega projects such as the Amiral, the joint venture between Saudi Aramco and Total, and the Ma'aden Phosphate 3 in Saudi Arabia, as well as Buruj 4 in Abu Dhabi, are also on track for completion in 2024 and 2023, respectively. Understandably, the plunging prices and collapsing demand during Q1 and Q2 of 2020 had its negative impact on most of the regional chemical companies' stock prices, which dropped on average by 33% on year-on-year basis and started to bounce back only in Q3, though not fully recovered yet. Taking the publicly listed Saudi company as a proxy for the GCC chemical companies, every company saw sharp decline in sales and earnings in Q1 and Q2. Q3 appears to be better. SABIC reported sale of $7.8 billion, which is a 19% increase over the previous quarter. Similarly, SIPCHEM posted $370 million in sales in Q3, which is a 43% increase over the previous quarter. So this is in a nutshell the performance of the regional chemical industry in the Arabian Gulf region. Back to you, Will.
Thank you. It's interesting that you talked about supply chain disruption, Dr. Sadoom. We've been writing a lot about these sort of global logjam of containers, especially with rates rocketing, especially on the Asia to Europe route. Is that something that's still persisting? Are you aware from your region to your export markets?
Well, indeed, this is the case. You know, one of the advantages that had been leveraged in the early days by the regional producers is the backhauling. You know, all those containers coming from Asia, you know, to be sent back, you know, the rate that had been charged was minimal, you know, by the shipping companies. Yes, with the shortage in the container, this has been a challenge, and that had led to an escalated, rates of for shipping the chemical export.
Okay, and do you have any pointers for us for 2021?
Well, in 2021, you know, we expect the GCC chemical output to grow by 1.2% year-on-year basis. That said, there is a cautious, this is a cautious optimism, and it depends on the international trade in 2021, with the global trade estimated to grow by 7.2%, and the GCC chemical trade, we expect it to grow by 10%, slightly above the, you know, the global trade figure. On the revenue side, we expect an improvement in 2021, supported by higher oil prices and the rebound in demand in end-user industries. The commodity chemicals, which is the predominant output of our industry, saw the sharpest revenue decline in 2020, and we are expecting, you know, to see a strong recovery this year. However, we don't expect revenue to return to the pre-pandemic level. In 2021, our industry revenue is forecasted, to range between 60 to 65 billion US dollar, which is about 15 to 20% increase over the revenue achieved in 2020. However, this is still 25 to 30% lower than the pre-pandemic average of US dollar 80 billion, which is generated by a regional producer annually since 2011. A critical aspect of dealing with revenue generation in 2021 will be to understand which end user customer industries trends are temporary and which one are permanent, as recovery will likely be uneven across end user market and geographies. In the chemical end user sector performance, we can expect temporary recovery in 2021 from 2020 level, followed by a slow growth period until 2023. We believe that packaging will be the key growth enabler, while the automotive market will follow a sluggish recovery path until 2024. We also believe that significant effort will be required to revive the construction sector, which was already witnessing a sluggish growth since 2018.
Just picking up on the projects aspect, you mentioned quite a few delays or changes to projects in your region. Do you think that there's sort of a longer term, there's a bit of a pullback from spending so much on large scale, world scale chemical projects in the GCC region?
Well, it all depends. It all depends on the health of the global economy. If we see a V-shaped recovery, which is highly unlikely, this might be a short term. But if it is a U-shape, then most likely that we will, it will take a longer time, and it will all depend on the health of the global economy, as well as the demand recovery. We anticipate, India and China to lead, the global recovery for chemical demand, and being with close proximity to both markets, we are optimistic that many projects that had been planned, could be implemented. Though in terms of when, that's a big question mark. Those projects that are under construction will definitely proceed. The projects that are in the planning phase, such as the crude oil to chemical, may take much longer beyond 2025.
Thank you. Let's move on now to talk a bit more about the challenges and opportunities. You've talked about the pandemic. Later on, we can look in a bit more detail at China's increasing self-sufficiency and the sustainability trend. Are these what you see as the main trends, key challenges and opportunities, or would you like to highlight any others?
Well, I think, challenges had been part of the journey, for the GCC chemical industry as well as for other, given that, our industry is cyclical, up and down, and there are always, challenges related, to market accessibility. But in 2021, we believe that the challenges will revolve around, the continued uncertainty and the market volatility. Maybe as outlined, the ongoing supply chain disruption and the demand disruption, which is associated, as you outlined, with the pandemic, as well as, the stagnation in the global economic activity, which are, obviously closely linked to the demand for chemical. That said, we expect to see an uptick in trade and continued focus on consolidation, as well as more focus on circular economy and meeting climate change target. And as we know, challenges provide opportunities also. And the transition to low carbon, for instance, will top the regional industries agenda and create new opportunities through collaboration with various partners on technology initiatives. For GCC producer, we believe that green and blue hydrogen is becoming part of a long-term strategy for potential future business when hydrogen become a dominant fuel source in the energy mix. The Arabian Gulf chemical players are already capitalizing on this trend. And in September 2020, Aramco and the Japanese Institute of Energy Economics, in partnership with SABIC, have successfully demonstrated the production and the world's first shipment of blue ammonia from Saudi Arabia to Japan. 40 ton of high-grade blue ammonia have been dispatched to Japan for use in zero-carbon power generation. The blue ammonia pilot projects involve the conversion of hydrocarbons to hydrogen and then to ammonia, as well as the capture of associated carbon dioxide emission designated for use in ethanol production at SABIC's Ibn Sina facility, and another 20 ton of the captured CO2 being used for enhanced oil recovery at Aramco at Aramco's Ithmaniya field, oil field. This milestone highlights one of the several pathways within the concept of a global circular carbon economy championed by Saudi G20 presidency, and is a framework which CO2 emissions are reduced, removed, recycled, and reused, as opposed to being released into the atmosphere. On a different but relevant drive, the challenge posed by the COVID-19 pandemic pushed the regional chemical producer to focusing more on digitalization and data to drive their competitive advantage and support the industry's evolution to new product, services, markets, and business model. COVID-19 had also accelerated the industry's transformation and restructuring, while there are major consolidation taking place in the region, including the Saudi Aramco and SABIC in Saudi Arabia, QP and Muntajat in Qatar, OQ consolidation drive in Oman. There was also business unit spin-offs, which led to the creation of SABIC Agri-Nutrient Company and SABIC Specialty Business Company. Being export-oriented, perhaps one of the key challenge for the GCC chemical industry had been and will remain the rising protectionism and trade barriers. For example, we've seen in the past years the US-China trade war and the new trade treaties, including the Brexit, the regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership Pact between China, Japan, South Korea, Australia, New Zealand, and the 10 member countries of the association, which seek to reduce tariff and other trade barriers in the region. The most immediate impact could be the regionalization of polyethylene and polypropylene trades within Asia, Northeast Asia, and Oceania. As a result, GCC producer could face higher energy barriers to export to this region. And that emphasized the need to negotiate a trade agreement between the GCC and China, which had been, you know, on the table for the last year or so. At GPC, I believe that establishing multilateral or free trade agreement with key export region will be crucial to ensure that the GCC chemical producer secures markets for their products and continues, you know, to maintain healthy export to their end user market.
Just on the free trade deals, do you have free trade deals in place yet with any of the key export partners, or how close do you think they are?
No, unfortunately, not with any of the key, trade partners. But we've been, negotiating and taking part in the negotiation between the GCC and China to strike, a free trade deal between the two parties. We have also been, recently working with the GCC Secretariat on forging a free trade with the UK. So, post the Brexit, of course. The EU, this has been, a long story, but we're, optimistic that, soon there will be some positive development in reviving, the negotiation.
And in the meantime, you're subject to WTO tariffs, I guess. So that's 4.56%.
6.5%, correct, yeah.
Okay, thanks. Do carry on. Anything else to say on challenges or opportunities?
That's all. I mean, we're hopeful that, in the benefit for the mutual, parties, whether, the exporter and the end users, we think that, free trade will reflect positively on both parties. So we're fully endorsing, free trade agreements with key partners.
Thank you. But perhaps we could have a closer look now at China, which, as we all know, is starting up projects left, right, and center. It's becoming increasingly self-sufficient in some polymers. And maybe if it's becoming more self-sufficient, it may require less imports from the Gulf region. Have you got any comments on how you think this could impact this key export market of the GCCs, Dr. Sunim?
Well, this is a very important point. I think, China is a very important market for our regional industry. And about one quarter of the GCC chemical export volume goes to China. We believe that China will lead the chemical recovery in 2021. With a growth of 5.4%, the second highest globally after India, which is projected to grow by 7.5%. In the short term, demand for many chemical products will be approaching and even exceeding the pre-pandemic level, mostly due to increase in government spending and recovering consumer demand, improved demand for chemical in China, will help the GCC chemical industry to secure demand for its products. At the same time, the GCC producer must watch out, for the capacity expansion in China and mitigate the potential impact by diversifying, their access to other global markets. While in the short term, there might be no impact on trade flow, long term, both the GCC and the global chemical industry are expected to see the continued impact from massive capacity buildup in China. Sustaining healthy trade level with China for the GCC will depend on the cost leadership of the GCC producer compared with their Chinese counterpart. This will prove even more challenging long-term due to the fluctuating prices and tough competition emerging from the US chemical producers. Thus, it is expected that the regional producers will focus more on developing the regional industry, as well as looking for alternative market outside China.
Have you got any ideas which other markets might become more attractive to you?
Well, given the close proximity of India, and India is one of the key markets for our industry, especially in the fertilizer as well as some other chemicals. We anticipate that India will offset any loss that we may encounter due to the self-sufficiency drive in China. Likewise, we look at Africa as one of the key markets that will emerge in the years to come. Africa is projected to have 1 billion inhabitants by the year 2030. Though there are some challenges related to the infrastructure, the close proximity of our region to Africa, give us advantage over others, and we will leverage definitely this advantage hopefully also expand our market share in Africa, whether it is fertilizer or plastic or other chemicals.
Well, thank you, Dr. Sadoun. I'd like to bring in John Richardson now, who's our senior consultant in Asia for ICIS, just to get your reflections on the China self-sufficiency question.
Well, I think it depends on the product. In polyethylene, linilo and low density, we might see an actual increase in import demand this year. And over the long term, it's hard to see how China can move much closer towards self-sufficiency. So focusing in those products for the GCC is good. The data show that in HD, there'll be a fall this year. There's a big increase in Chinese capacity. And these assumptions, by the way, are based on fairly healthy demand growth in the China market. And HD as well sees some quite aggressive capacity expansions, but they'll still be importing a lot of HD out to 2025 and beyond. The problem really lies with some of the other derivatives of the monomers. Paraxylene, we've already seen a big fall in imports, and it's quite possible in the next three years, that China becomes completely self-sufficient in paraxylene. Now, what surprised me looking at the data, and I missed this actually until the last few days, is ethylene glycols. There's a big increase in capacity this year. There was last year as well. A lot of that ethylene glycols capacity is in state-of-the-art plants based on steam cracking ethylene supply, not based on the old synthesis gas route. Much more efficient than the syngas route. Most of the new capacity additions, as I said, is based on ethylene rather than syngas. And it's quite possible, if you look again at the data, that ethylene glycols imports could fall by 45% this year, assuming about 4% demand growth, slightly down from last year, about 73% operating rate. Or maybe the operating rate will be 70%, slightly better in terms of the importer's position. And styrene and polypropylene, mustn't forget those two. Both of those are moving towards self-sufficiency within the next 2 or 3 years. So really a question of, which derivatives. Methanol is absolutely fine. play around with the data as much as you like, China will still be a major dominating methanol importer. So it's really, as I said, polyethylene fine, methanol fine. The other derivatives are problematic.
And Dr. Stoon mentioned India and Africa as potential replacements for exports if demand from China wanes a little bit. Do you see those two markets having a lot of potential?
There is potential there, yeah. I mean, it'd be difficult to place China certainly in the medium term, short and medium term, but there's a lot of potential for growth in those markets, as Dr. Zoon says, with the growth of the African population. But it's going to take a while to fully replace the Chinese market.
Thank you. Well, let's take a quick closer look at the sustainability trend now, which Dr. Sadoun mentioned earlier as affecting the GCC region. We've got the shift from global to regional local chemical markets. We've got the circular economy, got the rising costs of carbon. But to set the scene, I'd like to bring in Nigel Davis, our Insight editor. Nigel, you've been writing about and keeping a close eye on what's been happening in Europe with some of the big oil refining companies, which are in a lot of trouble financially. And some of them, Shell last week had a strategy day that we all tuned into, where Shell was describing its sort of major shift towards low carbon or carbon neutrality, reducing the number of refineries, but still with a good focus on chemicals. So I just wonder, could you highlight for us what's happening globally with the shift, with the changes that oil companies are seeing, and how that could affect, or how that could apply to Gulf region?
Well, thank you, Will. I feel that the relationship between the refinery and the chemical plant, or the chemical company, has been changing over the years, with the major oil companies obviously getting much closer to chemicals, integrating chemicals into their refining operations. And a few years ago, I suppose we were thinking, and Dr. Sadoun mentioned this oil to chemicals project with Aramco and SABIC, which has been downgraded somewhat now. That seemed to be a way forward, that refineries would become more akin to feedstock producing facilities for chemicals production, alongside they're still quite very important fuels production capabilities. But I think we're moving even further now, and down a path towards greater sustainability, as I suppose, and producing more products that are perhaps can be seen as being greener, and also the facilities themselves being very complex, as they are already, but I mean complex in producing a much wider range of products, and also products which have that sort of greener tinge to them, use less carbon in production, less heat, or heat derived in different ways, not just by burning natural gas, but by using electricity, renewables perhaps. So a much more integrated and broad-based complexes. And it's interesting to hear that some of the refinery projects in the Middle East, or the GCC region rather, they've been delayed a bit, but I mean, what are the next generation refineries going to look like? And I think also, the opportunities that are there, not just the challenges, but the opportunities there to produce what we might consider to be greener products. And Dr. Sadoun mentioned the the blue ammonia project, which is fascinating in itself, because there you are replacing, carbon intense production of electricity in Japan with a much, much cleaner blue ammonia that can be used to produce electricity in a much more carbon efficient way, let's put it that way. So a lot of change going on, a lot of opportunity too.
And Nigel, just as a follow-up, obviously in the Gulf region, those companies are sitting on huge reserves of oil and gas. Do you think that they're going to just leave that stuff in the ground as they move towards a circular economy, or are they likely to continue to exploit those reserves?
Well, to a great extent, the reserves would have to be monetized in a different way, and be interested to hear what Dr. Sadoun feels that, how countries in the region can move towards a more sort of carbon, less carbon intense and a more carbon dioxide efficient future?
Well, I don't see, you know, a contradiction between the two approaches. You know, the oil and gas companies, if you look at the pilot project that I had outlined, it's essentially, you know, using, you know, gas, natural gas, extracting, you know, hydrogen and, you know, manufacturing ammonia. So this could be one of the routes that can be further exploited, you know, by the oil and gas companies in the future. I think when it comes to the circular economy, there is a commitment from all the players, you know, to truly fulfill, you know, the requirement for the circular economy, be it in terms of reducing the carbon footprint, be it in designing, you know, the process to minimize the waste, and, you know, to also use the waste as a valuable resource. You know, we've seen even the government now stepping in and establishing, you know, companies to leverage, you know, the recycling, the public investment fund in Saudi Arabia establish, you know, a company working on a P&L basis, you know, to expand on the, you know, recycling within Saudi Arabia, looking at all, you know, options, including, you know, waste to energy approach, which is in their, you know, strategy and portfolio of business. So in a nutshell, you know, it's, I think the circular economy for the oil and gas companies also represent an opportunities to be explored.
Thank you. John, perhaps I could bring you back in. Could you give me your analysis, your vision for how Asia, China, Gulf chemical companies could follow the circular economy or the green agenda effectively?
Well, I think as Dr. Sutton said, it's an opportunity. And Nigel, I think there's this real sea change taking place globally in terms of putting a price on carbon. And I think, you know, the Gulf is in a great position to innovate. That blue ammonia hydrogen, blue ammonia project is fascinating. It'll be all about, you know, as Nigel said, chemical refinery integration, and how to produce maybe biofuels from a refinery, use green hydrogen at the cracker level, electric furnaces based on renewable energy. And all of these opportunities the Gulf can take advantage of. Strategically, China will be pushing very hard in this area. It's committed to carbon neutrality by 2060 at the latest. And I think it'll see an opportunity there to invest heavily in its own greening of the chemical industry. So I think the Gulf can be a driver of this, along with China, in helping innovation really and solve the problem for the world in terms of reducing carbon.
And John,
can I jump in there, Will?
Oh yes, hello. Well, welcome, Paul. I'm pleased you made it to the call.
Thank you. Yes, sorry to be here. Force majeure, as they say. I was just very impressed by what Dr. Sadoun and Nigel and John were saying there, and it reminded me that in the summer I was an expert with the World Economic Forum for the Build Back Better program. Dr. Albanian of SABIC was chairing, and I think, you know, the conclusions that we came out with from that World Economic Forum on the sustainability issue are really fit with what people have been saying, because what we were saying was there's a need now to stimulate a new wave of innovation through a collaborative ecosystem by engaging with value chain partners, governments and startups. The chemical industry can build an ecosystem that drives the next wave of innovation. And I think that is really going to be the big opportunity now for the region. Dr. Arabenian understands that, was very passionate about that during our meetings. And, you know, we can all see that CO2 has come along as a major issue, that refining is, you know, BP say peak oil was last year, other people say it's a bit later. You know, in a way, it doesn't really matter. It's, you know, what date it is. We know that that path is going down, and the sustainability area, the recycling and the innovation. And I do think that the chemical industry and the chemical companies in the Middle East have a tremendous opportunity here, not only for their own countries, but also obviously for the surrounding countries, India and parts of Asia, plus of course up to Turkey and that part of the Mediterranean. So I think it's a very exciting time now.
Just an example, you know, on opportunities that can be leveraged, you know, by the industry, through the circular economy concept. I think, the sustainability is in essence, you know, turning waste into value. And if you look at the evolution of the industry in this part of the world, it was based on capturing, you know, the associated gas which used to be flared, significant volume of the gas used to be flared, wasting, you know, a depletable, you know, resource. And polluting the environment. Establishing the industry had been, you know, a step in this direction of capturing the gas and turning that waste into value. Continuing this journey, if we look at all the GCC players, and if I take SABIC as a proxy here, you know, they built the world's largest carbon capturing and utilization plant in United, which is an affiliate of SABIC, with a capacity of 500,000 ton per year of CO2, and that the captured CO2 is utilized for the manufacturing of ethylene glycol. To put things into perspective, this means that volume of carbon dioxide captures mean that we have to plant over 11 million trees, you know, to capture equivalent amount of CO2. There are technologies now exploring, you know, building some facilities and processes based on, CO2 as a raw material, as a feedstock. And Aramco is one of the leaders in that area.
Dr. Sadoun, John, Paul, Nigel, thank you so much for joining me this week. It's been a fascinating discussion. And it's very easy to subscribe to ICIS podcasts now. We're producing more of them and they're well worth a listen. Just go to any podcast app and search on ICIS Chemical Podcasts.